Welcome to another episode of Two Peas on a Podcast, counting down movies, music, TV, and pop culture, one top five at a time. And now, here are the Two Peas.
I was five and he was six. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to another episode of Two Peas on a Podcast. So glad that you're joining us yet again. And I'm always thrilled when I have a first-time guest on the program. And I've been trying to do that a little bit more frequently lately. And I've got another one tonight. This is a guy that I've been admiring for a while. His podcast and his buddy has been on with me before. I want to say two times, Mr. J. Ledbetter. But this time around, I have Ryan from the Extra Film over at In Session Film for the first time. Ryan, what's up, brother? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, man. No, this is exciting. When I got the call, when I saw the bat signal up in the air, I was like, hell yeah, totally come on the show. I've listened to Jay's interactions on those episodes, and I'm so sorry for anything that he may have said or controversial statements. I kind of have to be the apologist for him.
You know, it's been a while, but, you know, he came on last time and we did Tarantino's Scenes. It was right when I remember we recorded that on the week that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out. Mm-hmm. And I want to say he was pretty well behaved.
That's good.
I mean, for Jay standards, you know, he was pretty well behaved.
I did help him a lot with that because, as you know, if you listen to In Session Film, like I know a lot of your listeners and you have, mm-hmm. everyone knows that I'm a massive Quentin Tarantino fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of asking me what were some of mine. And I think I gave him like a 1,000-word essay on each scene. Maybe ridiculous.
Talking about the props in each scene and everything.
Yeah, I was like, you know, sure, this man. Is how I think he set it up. If you just look to the left of this angle, no, I'm just kidding. He did a great job, and
you guys put on a cool show, man. And we were just talking about it before we started recording. I love being able to have a go to for like the independent films too that don't always get a lot of love in the podcast world. So I really appreciate you guys doing that, and I'm a big fan of your show and JD and Brendan as well. And I think you guys got a good thing going over there, man. And obviously I'm thrilled that you're here, buddy. And we do a top five show here, and we often dive into movies. So I said, well, of course I'm gonna get Ryan's first time to be a movie topic. Mm-hmm. So what are we counting down today, Ryan? Tell the folks what the list is today.
We are doing the top five revenge movies.
Yes. And you mentioned to me that when I pitched this list to you and we kind of settled on it, that you had never made a list of revenge films before.
No.
So when you compiled it, I mean, just tell me a little bit about it without giving any titles away. I mean, how was it for you? Was this a list that was kind of excruciating for you to come up with, or was it pretty quick, came to you right away?
I think there were a couple titles initially that I was like, well, of course those are going to be this. And I think there were filling it out, though, the rest of it was a little hard. I did have some criteria for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the idea of revenge to be at the forefront of the film. I didn't mm-hmm. want it to be some added layer on by the end of the film. Mm-hmm. Something that is like you could kind of sit there and second guess whether or not. I could use an example if you'd like.
No, I don't want to give away any titles, but maybe later
I can tell you what I mean by it. But mm-hmm. suffice to say, I wanted, when I thought of that movie, one of the first things besides performances and otherwise to be the idea of revenge, and that's what I wanted it to be. So that's where my choices lie tonight.
Okay. Well, you know, I had a similar sensibility as far as that goes. There were like two that came to mind immediately. And those actually ended up being my top two on mm-hmm. this list. And then, you know, I did dive into Google a little bit and Ranker and some other things. And I was like, okay. And I kind of had my memory jarred a little bit on some of them. There's one that's very recent. It came out in the last couple of years. But a lot of mine are throwbacks to like the 90s, maybe the early 2000s. Most of mine are mm-hmm. in the 90s, though. It was fun for you. I mean, a revenge film is like, it's such a kind of... I don't know. It's like one of those things that exists in cinema that you don't really think about. But I feel like every year there's probably like four or five revenge films that come out at least, right? I mean, it's a pretty common theme lately in cinema.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is, I think, one that is permeated throughout cinema, you know, not just recently, but through the history of movies, right. of the idea of someone getting the idea to enact revenge on someone for a wrongdoing. I mean, and it makes for, you know, compelling action, you know, mostly it's in action films. It's not, you know, in various genres of that, whether it's like a Western or a thriller or Kung Fu or just a straight up shoot 'em up kind of film. I love a good revenge film.
It
brings for some damn good drama and really interesting performances too from actors that you might not think of when you think of revenge.
Really, really it does. And I'm anxious to see what represents that for you on your list. So why don't you get us started, man? What's your number five revenge movie?
Five, four, three, two, one.
And here we go.
My number five is a movie that for some of our listeners on In Session Film, they may not have ever heard me talk about this movie before, but in kind of preparation for this and weeding out some titles, I got my compatriots over at In Session Film to talk about a couple of these movies without actually even talking about revenge, just kind of getting their overall opinions. And this was a movie that a couple of them didn't really like, but it's a movie that I really like, and it's V for Vendetta.
Okay.
Like that movie for me, I remember seeing it in the theaters, and this is like 2006, so this is dating myself. I was like in my teenage years,
sure.
And I just thought that the movie was a really interesting take on the revenge genre in terms of you have this mask character wearing this Guy Fawkes mask who runs across this girl, and they both essentially are trying to take back the country that is completely taken over by a radical government. And I still think the movie is extremely timely. It's one of my favorite scripts from the Wachowskis. Hugo Weaving's performance in that movie is awesome as V, right. You know, and as along with Natalie Portman too, because that whole sequence of her kind of being imprisoned and her having to, it's him basically breaking her down to the level of his anger and where he is at mentally to carry out these tasks. And then you have this also side character of these detectives trying to uncover why V is like this tyrannical government led by John Hurt. I think it's still a really smart film, and like I said, one that is very timely for nowadays,
yeah,
as well.
If you think about it, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
I wish we had maybe a V or two out there in this world.
I was going to say, where's V when we need him?
where is he when we need him?
Oh my gosh.
It's a really underrated film because I don't think people talk about it a lot, because when they think of the Wachowskis, they think of like Cloud Atlas or The Matrix you know, all their other titles. But, you know, this one I really do enjoy.
And it's a good pick, man. It's a good pick. It didn't make my list, but I do like that movie. I feel like maybe the reason I didn't consider it strongly enough for my personal list is because I haven't seen it since it came out. It's been a long time. You were talking about dating yourself. You know, I graduated high school in 94.
Ooh,
so
I was, you know, I was 2 years like, old.
I was going to say, it sounds like I might be a little bit older than you, but
it's okay. It's all right.
But I haven't seen that in probably 10 or 15 years, but I have fond memories of that film, and I love me some Natalie Portman, bro. She's one of my favorite actresses ever. And I remember her being just phenomenal in that. All right. So that's your number five, V for Vendetta. My number five is a little bit different. It actually came out the year I graduated. So I just mentioned I graduated in 94. And this might be a little bit of a divisive pick in terms of it's kind of like a split movie, I think. Kind of like what you were saying with your pick. I don't think everybody's going to jump on board with me. But you got to imagine a kid that just graduated high school and seeing something like this in the theater, which I did, which probably added to my kind of allure to this picture. But it's also based on a graphic novel, and it has a comic background, but it's The Crow from 1994.
A man and a woman in law a year ago. Motherfucking mine.
Listen!
I'm sure you'll remember. You killed them. On Halloween.
Yeah, okay. Halloween, yeah. Some dude, some bitch, whatever, man.
Her name was Shelley.
You cut her.
You raped her.
Shelly, yeah. I shanked her pink ass and she loved it.
Murder, man! Murder! Let me tell you about murders. It's fun. It's easy. You gonna learn all about it. I'd like you to meet two buddies of mine.
We never miss.
Try hard. Try again. Victims. Aren't we all?
It's a product of the time the movie is, but also for me, just from a nostalgia standpoint, kind of like what I was talking about. But Brendan Lee, who of course infamously died on the set of this movie due to a mishap, it's so dark. It's such a dark, ominous, and kind of gritty story. It's a supernatural story. And like I said, it has comic origins, but it's him just kind of stalking these baddies throughout the movie and inciting his revenge for them taking his wife from him and also leaving him for dead. And he kind of takes on this crow-like, I don't know what you want to call it even, kind of existential like aura that he kind of takes on, which, you know, crows are kind of dark figures in, through mythology anyway. And he kind of lives that and just incites his revenge. And there's so much rain in that movie, and the movie shot so gritty and so dark. And I don't know, I just love it, man. I love the look of it. I mean, I was a goth dude in the 90s, so that probably has a lot to do with it. You know what I mean? I love the soundtrack to this movie with all the grunge music that was on there. So yeah, I don't know if you're a fan of The Crow, but that's, I had to put it on a revenge list, and that's my number five. What do you think, man?
I think it's a great pick, but I must admit, I have not seen The Crow.
Oh, interesting.
It is a blind spot of mine. I know a lot of people absolutely love this movie, and you know they've been desperately trying to find a way to remake it couple of years, and I still don't know how they would be able to. And yet, I've always wanted to go back and watch it because
you should.
I like campy 90s movies. Like, you know, my first introduction to a character like Batman is like Batman and Robin. You know what I mean?
Because I was such a kid. Right.
So, and I rewatched that movie recently, and it's such a, one of those, it's a great movie because it's so bad. And I'm not saying The Crow is like that, but movies in that era, blockbusters of that era, they didn't have to have this kind of prestige around it. They just wanted to have fun. And that movie always just looks like a dark, fun movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that you hadn't seen it, but I didn't want to give anything away. I apologize, but the way it's shot is really inventive for the time too, because you know if you see it in today's day and age it wouldn't seem that way, but you have to remember this was the early 90s, and it's just such a gritty, just like, I don't want to use the word depressing because then that doesn't make anyone want to go watch it, you know what I mean, but it's so dreary. It's a very dreary shot film, and the mood of the film comes across in the visuals of the film, and it's great, man. I mean, I would say check it out. You got Ernie Hudson in there playing one of the detectives. It's a good flick, man. And the soundtrack is amazing. I still play that soundtrack to this day. Some bands on there like Helmet, Rage Against the Machine, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails. You know, just a product of its time, obviously. But being a 90s music fan, I do love that soundtrack to this day. So go see The Crow, Ryan. But that's my number five. And we're over to you for your number four, buddy. What do you got?
My number four is the more recent title on this list. And it's going to make a lot of people happy, but probably get yelled at me for being too low on the list, is John Wick.
Hello, John.
I heard about your wife. I'm sorry. My condolences.
It's seemed to be fate or happenstance or just bad fucking luck caused our paths to cross once again.
John? Let us not resort to our baser instincts
and handle this like civilized men to move on.
What do you say?
Enough. Task a crew.
How many?
How many do you have?
That's even lower for me. So
yeah,
John, he's a hero.
I mean, John Wick is one of the biggest surprises of the last decade. It is. I mean, it is all set up on the premise of these guys. They want to take John Wick's car. Mm-hmm. We all know what happens. They go into his house. They steal the car. They kill the dog, and they wake up the Bubba. You know what I mean? And that's something you should not do, as we've seen in the first one and then the two subsequent sequels, all over a dog. And the idea of that seems absolutely insane, to the point when the first trailer came out, I must admit, I did not see the first John Wick in theaters. I just thought, oh, this the movie is going to be terrible. It's going to just be awful. Like, they stuck in the middle of August. It was a bad release date. And I remember I was by myself. I was house sitting and it was on HBO, and I was like, sure, I'll give it a shot. You know, it's one of those where, like, why not? I don't got anything to lose here. I'm not paying for it. And I watched it and I loved it so much that I made my wife watch it the next night with me, and she loved it. And then it just has then spun off to, I think, one of the best franchises working today.
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to ask your opinion about something, and we don't want to get, I need to get off on a long drawn out discussion. But when it comes to John Wick, this is on my honorable mentions, by the way. So it didn't make my top five, but it's very close. I love John Wick, the original, which, of course, is what you're naming. And John Wick 2 and 3, I also like them as action pieces. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I feel like as the franchise has gone on, it's become more about that world and the action within that world, as opposed to what I often refer to as the heart of the original movie. Because, you know, we're making a revenge list, right? So you're naming John Wick, and I did too. It's in my top 10. But I don't know that I could really sell John Wick 2 or John Wick 3, if that makes sense, from like a revenge arc. I feel like the first one had so much heart and just kind of simplistic believability behind it. And then as the series has gone on, it's turned into just like a gunplay kind of. And I like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like them. I just, they're so much different than the original, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I think that the idea of revenge is sprinkled throughout the sequels as well. I mean, you have this blood oath that he must fulfill. Then it turns on him, right? Because the guy wants to leave no loose ends. Right. So he must seek revenge in order to get this bounty off of his head. And then by doing that, he then has himself go excommunicado, and he has to kind of, by the end of the film, seek revenge on the High Council. And now, and this is not, you know, I think by the end of chapter 3, Parabellum, there's definite aspects of where you could see it go down some more revenge to characters and friends that he's known in the past that have kind of double-crossed him to save their own neck. But I do agree with you, the ideas of revenge are more thematically present within the first film, because it's so personal. Because we are established really quick early on with this dog, and we get, I mean, the man only got a damn day with the dog. I mean, that's some bullshit.
That's
right
crazy.
I mean, it's you know, it's from his dead wife. Like, he just put her in the ground, and they took it away from him. Like, I don't know about you, man, but I would totally do everything that he did and 10 times more if that happened to me. It's completely relatable to just wipe off the Russian mob.
Sure,
Keanu's such a badass, man.
He's such a badass.
Like, I'm so happy that we have him back.
I know 2019 was a Keanu year, am I right?
This and I'll Always Be My Maybe, and then him as Duke Kaboom in Toy Story.
Hell yeah.
Stealing the show.
Hell yeah.
I mean, Keanu's in a Keanu-sance right now.
Really,
screw McConaughey.
And they're doing John Wick 4 and Matrix 4, like, supposed to open on the same weekend next year or something like that.
Yeah, and then they've got Bill and Ted coming out this year. You know, he's back, and I love it. And this I think is, I would say, one of his best performances too, in terms of the emotionality in the first half of the film. And then I love, like, the little aspects of, like, Willem Dafoe and John Leguizamo, and of course my boy McShane and Lance Reddick. I mean, they are just awesome in this movie. And, you know, that's the other thing about a good revenge movie too, is you have to, beyond just the theme of revenge, there has to be something also pretty memorable in terms of characters, and I think, like, set pieces and just the story in general. It has to make sense and be exciting, and also demand repeats. I think every one of these movies on my list, they're repeat viewings for me, and that's what I love about it.
Well, I like it, man. It's, like I said, it's in my honorable mention, so it's a good pick. John Wick, Mr. Keanu Reeves, is your number four. My number four is a movie that is under the radar, and I hope you've seen it. It came out in 2004. It's an awesome filmmaker, in my opinion, Mr. Tony Scott. But the movie is called Man on Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It stars Denzel. You said you love it?
Oh, that's a great movie, man. Yeah. It's very underrated.
I agree. It's underrated and underseen for some reason. But I saw it when it came out, and I just fell in love with it immediately. I mean, Denzel Washington is one of the greatest living actors we have, for starters. And to see him... You know, I mean, Training Day is probably a better performance from him, but this is in that same vein, in my opinion, where he's just kind of very violent and malicious and just kicking ass and taking names. You know what I mean? And Denzel can do the dramatic turn, but that's not what this is. I mean, this is him as a vigilante psychopath. Do you know what I mean? And he's inciting revenge for, he was hired by Mark Anthony's character, I can't remember, in Mexico City to be the bodyguard for his daughter, who was played by a young Dakota Fanning, who I also love, and this is one of her very, very early roles, and she gets kidnapped. Well, they end up, you know, forming a bond, and they become very close. He's got problems with alcohol. She's kind of inadvertently curing him of that and giving him this friendship that he needs, and then right when things are starting to look up for him, she gets kidnapped, and it's thought that she may have perished. You know, they can't find her. They think she may have been killed, and he just, for lack of a better way to put it, snaps and goes on a rampage, determined to find her, and he fucks up anybody that he comes across that has anything to do with her disappearance. So if you like Denzel and you like a revenge movie, then you need to look up Man on Fire. It's my number four. What were you want to say about Man on Fire, buddy?
Oh man, this is one of those great Denzel performances that we just don't talk about enough. I mean, he's made so many wonderful pictures and has, you know, been in awards contention for so many things. But I just love how cold he is when the turn of the film takes place. You know, when Dakota Fanning's, you know, character is taken, you know, it's a better movie than Taken, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Because he's just like, I don't give a damn. I got nothing to lose.
Right.
Exactly. And Denzel plays it perfect. Like, it is him with Tony Scott. That relationship is one of the most underrated actor director relationships we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I think in cinema, I think there's kind of been this resurgence of late for a lot of people talking about just how great Tony Scott is. And I think he made some really great films, including a movie like Unstoppable with Denzel.
That was good too, yeah.
It's a really solid action film. But this one, I think, is their best outing together. Mm-hmm. And it's because of just all that raw emotion. And it's shot really raw too, you know, in that Tony Scott kind of zoom in and out kind of style. I love it, man. And then it's got, like you said, Mark Anthony and Dakota Fanning in like a really good performance, unlike, you know, something like War of the Worlds. And a good little bit from Christopher Walken too.
I was going to say, yeah, Christopher Walken popping up in there too. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I love Man on Fire, and I own this movie, and I revisit it often. It's one of my favorite Denzel performances. And like we both have said already, it's just underseen. So if you guys like Denzel and you're listening, look up Man on Fire from 2004, which is my number four. Ryan, we're up to your number three, man. What do you got?
Well, my number three is from a director that I don't think, you know, a lot of people would not know. He is a very popular director. He's one of the most popular directors on the planet. Me and my co-host Jay Ledbetter, we talk about directors that have like a certified blank check, carte blanche to do whatever they want. I think Christopher Nolan is definitely one of those directors. And while a lot of people really love Memento, and it could definitely be on this list too, the movie I'm actually going to go with as my number three is his movie from 2006, The Prestige.
Okay.
I think that movie is one of the most underrated movies within his catalog. I think it's his best film in his catalog.
No.
Oh, if you insist.
No.
I'm not performing tonight. I'm only doing one show, but to be frank, my people pretty much run things these days.
Get up there! Get up! Your illusion, the transported man. I'm not claiming to know your methods or anything, but I had a similar trick in my act, and I used a double.
I see. Very good.
Well, it was, and then it went bad. What I didn't count on was that when I incorporated this bloke into my act, he had complete power over me.
Complete power, you say?
Be very careful giving someone that power over you.
Well, thank you. Yes, thank you for the warning.
Oh, the great Danton. I apologize. There simply is too much magic for my stage at the Pantages across the street. Pardon my intrusion. And go easy on the poor chap. He does try so very hard.
I love this movie, and it is, in my opinion, the quintessential revenge movie. You're talking about this movie about these two magicians kind of, you know, vying for power, but really what they're doing is trying to destroy each other from the inside out, you know, from each one of them trying to learn this trick. And the movie is playing it as like the trick is the most important. No, the most important thing is to break the other person in their soul and their life. I mean, Christian Bale is blamed for Hugh Jackman's wife's murder. You know, you have the angles by the end of the film that I will still not spoil that affect Christian Bale in his life as well. And it's the wonderful blend of what Nolan does perfectly, which is he is a master of time manipulation.
He is. Yeah.
And using this to understand why these two men are so asphyxiated with one another and want to ultimately destroy each other before they destroy themselves. It gets two wonderful performances from Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. Michael Caine, I think, has never been any better than in this performance as kind of playing this man in the middle. You got Andy Serkis and Rebecca Hall and David fucking Bowie and ScarJo.
ScarJo, bro, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a wonderful cast, but what makes it is that quintessential rivalry between Jackman and Bale. And what I love about a revenge movie too sometimes is its ability to make you flip your allegiances. You know, you want to see, I think at the beginning, Christian Bale's Alfred Borden get his comeuppance, right? And by the end of the film, it's reversed, and it's really Angier, played by Jackman, that you want to see get it. And at the end of the day, you kind of want them both to walk away a little unscarved, and no one really gets, I think, full revenge, but they do destroy each other by the end. It's one of the most fascinating films, and I love it, man.
And Nolan's really good at mind fuck, right? I mean, he'll just mess with your mind, bro. And almost every movie he's done will do that. And this is no exception. This is a great film, man. It's another one that I own. And I do love that movie. What are you excited for, Tenet?
Oh, man. I mean, I watched that trailer for Tenet, and I don't know what the fuck's going on in that thing.
I don't either, but you could tell he's messing with time again.
Yeah. That guy is obsessed with time. Like, he must own like a really big watch collection or something.
Something. He's doing something over there, man. But we got to get him some help. But
yeah, somebody's got to sit him down and say, look, I understand you want to do time, but let somebody else do it. It's okay. Just do a straightforward movie.
Oh, no. Let him keep doing what he's doing, man. He's a master at it. So there you go.
I always think of that other guy's joke that Steve Coogan talks about where like, well, you want to start at a story at the end and then kind of go back and forth through it. And that's exactly what I think about any time a Christopher Nolan movie is, but especially this one.
That's awesome, man. So The Prestige is your number three. My number three is an Oscar winner for Best Picture, the only one on my list that would categorize as such. 2000, I talked about Tony Scott. This is Ridley Scott. It's a movie called Gladiator. It is my number three. Just a tremendous villain performance by Joaquin Phoenix in this as Commodus. Russell Crowe as Maximus, who, you know, the arc of the story, to keep it as simple as possible, is he went from the top of the mountain and became a slave and was forced to be the entertainment of these emperors that was sitting up on the high throne, and it just kind of became a gladiator, and then had to fight his way back to get his revenge for, you know, the loss of his family. And the really beautiful shots that happened throughout the movie when Russell Crowe's character is visiting Elysium, which is of course a version of the afterlife, and he sees the really beautiful flowers as he's walking towards the family that he's been trying to get back to. I just love this movie, man. It's so poetic and so epic, and you know, a lot of people try to duplicate it, but really Ridley Scott really really found something here. And obviously, as it was rained down on with awards in the year 2000. So right at the turn of the century, I thought this was one of the better films to come out of that decade, the 2000 to 2010 decade. Gladiator, my number three. You a fan of this one?
Oh, man, I love Gladiator. That movie's so cool. Like, especially like when I saw it and I was like towards a younger age, this was like one of the first R-rated movies you could watch, you know, and I just ate it up. I love Russell Crowe. You talk about Joaquin Phoenix, recent Oscar winner and all, but like this is when he like shines. He's just eating up the scenery in this movie. He's just chewing it up, just being all hammy. And yeah, I think a lot of people like kind of like to shit on this movie, you know, because Ridley Scott's had such a big career and they're like, really, this is the movie you won Best Picture for or or whatnot. But this movie is great. And it's kind of sad that we have not disagreed or I haven't shit on any one of your picks yet.
Yeah, I know.
Because we're making so great choices. I got no issues so far. This is some good stuff, man. I'm really enjoying this.
We're being so friendly to each other. But I mean, Gladiator is an epic achievement. But I mean, yeah. I've heard that too. And I mean, haters are going to hate, bro. I mean, you hear it every year, you know? So what are you going to do? I loved it. I mean, let me think for a second. I was 25 years old at the time that this movie came out. So I was a ripe age to see this film. And I thought it was just epic, man. That's the best word that I can think of when I think of this movie. So many memorable scenes that come from it. You know, the scene with the tiger in the arena, the scene when he reveals himself to Commodus, and I wish I could remember the dialogue that they shared, but you just get chills when Russell Crowe in so many words is saying, I'm gonna fucking kill you for what you did. Like, I'm in chains right now, but just so you know, I'm gonna be your demise. You know,
I'm coming
mean?
For you. And right. The reaction on Joaquin Phoenix's face, I mean, I know they only show like from the head up, but he looked like he was about to shit himself.
Right.
Like, it is like a, oh shit. Yeah. Like, I am screwed.
And man. when he's like telling him he'll fight him in the arena, you know, the emperor versus the gladiator or whatever. And he's like, you would fight me? And Joaquin's like, yeah, do you think I'm afraid of you? And Russell Crowe says, I think you've been afraid your whole life.
Ooh, yeah. Such a good burn.
I mean, come on,
I want to watch the movie right now. Girl, you're getting me all psyched
up. So Gladiator is my number three, and we are up to our runner-ups, Ryan. So I'm excited, man. You've got a killer list going on over there. What's your number two, buddy?
Well, I'm
going
to trade you one best pick film. You picked me. And okay. I think this revenge genre needs to have a Western. And my number two is Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven.
He went south yesterday. He ain't dead.
They killed him. I thought you knew that.
Nobody killed Ned. He didn't kill anyone. He went south yesterday. Why would anybody kill Ned? Who killed him?
Little Bill. The Bar T boys caught him, and Little Bill, he beat him up. He was making him answer questions and beating him up, and then Ned just died. They got a sign on him, says he was a killer.
They got a sign on him?
In front of Greeley's.
A sign on him in front of Greeley's. These questions Little Bill was asking, what kind were they?
About where you and him was.
Then what?
A cowboy come in saying he killed Quick Mike in the shithouse at the Bar T.
So Little Bill killed him for what we done, huh?
Not on purpose. But he started hurting him worse, making him tell stuff. First Ned wouldn't say nothing. And then Little Bill hurt him so bad, he said who you was. He said how you was really William Money out of Missouri. And Little Bill said the same William Money that dynamited the Rock Island and Pacific in 69, killing women and children and all. And Ned said he'd done a lot worse than that. Said he was more cold-blooded than William Bonney. And how if he hurt Ned again, he was going to come kill him. Like he killed a U.S. Marshal in 70.
That didn't scare Little Bill, did it?
No, sir.
Give me your Schofield.
What for, Will?
Give it to me.
Yeah, sure. You go on, keep it. I'm never gonna use it again. I don't kill nobody no more. I ain't like you, Will.
Nice.
So you have this movie that is essentially about like these girls that are getting abused, and they put this reward out for anyone to kill these really psychotic cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And then in steps, I mean, one of the most cinematic badasses of all time on screen in Clint Eastwood,
mm-hmm.
you know, as this guy who's retired and he's like, you know, I don't want any of that stuff. You know, and he's just like, I don't want one last job. I'm good here with my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he basically gets coerced back into it. But then the revenge, what I love about this movie is it takes another level of revenge.
It does, yeah. I actually have a third level that I want to mention. This is coming up on my list, too, by the way.
Yeah, when, like, little Bill, like, kills his best friend, you know, kills Morgan Freeman, and, like, fucking William Money just comes out,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, you know what, dude? I'm going to put this gun in your face. You're dead. Like, I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. I am not messing around anymore. Like, you may think that you can push everybody else around in this town,
mm-hmm.
but you ain't pushing me around. And I was just going to do one job and then I'd be done. But you forced my hand here. And right. It has one of the most tense, badass scenes in that bar with Eastwood holding that gun, that shotgun in his hand. It's such a good movie. It's, I think, Clint Eastwood's best directed movie.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of his best performances of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman. God, I fucking love Gene Hackman,
so
man.
Good,
it's a guy I want out of retirement, like right now.
Yeah, you know? So good. Richard Harris in that movie in supporting role as well. I mean, that's
Morgan Freeman.
That's a tour de force film. It's coming up later on my list, so I want to hold a little bit of commentary. Okay. That's our first crossover. I don't know if you've heard me mention it on the show before, but it's actually come up on a couple other lists that we've done, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time, period, of any genre. So it's coming up for me too, man, but Unforgiven is your number two. I obviously agree with the pick. So before we get to our number ones, let me give you my number two. My number two might be the quote-unquote obvious pick here, but I'm going to throw a little plot twist in there with it. My number two is Kill Bill from Quentin Tarantino. However, I'm going to say Kill Bill Volume 2 specifically. The bride accomplishing her redemption as best she can, at least. And the confrontation, the entire saga of Kill Bill is her seeking revenge against Bill. I mean, let's be real. The title of the fucking thing is Kill Bill. So in Volume 2, we get what we've been waiting 4+ hours to see, the bride and Beatrice accomplish. And what I love about it is the revenge that's being built up and the kind of palpable tension that's carried throughout the whole series. I, by the way, I think of these as one movie, but whatever. But anyway.
No, you're right. You're correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. I didn't know which camp you were in, but
I'm in the correct camp with you as well. I
mean, here we are agreeing again. What the hell?
One of this bullshit about two movies. This is one movie. This is one story. It's the way he wanted it.
Exactly.
You know, the studios fucked him over on this one. No, I agree with 100%.
But what I love about it, man, is, you know, revenge, bloody, violent. I mean, they had to put fucking scenes in black and white just so he could release it. I mean, that's how fucking graphic it was, or whatever word you want to use there. So we get to the end. She meets this guy that's been the product of her kind of lunacy throughout the entire story. And it's a very calm sit down at the table. And it's a conversation they have with, of course, some of the best dialogue, because it's coming from Tarantino. And it's Beatrix and Bill talking about what's happened, what's going to happen, why he did what he did. They talk about her daughter for a period of time. Do you know what I mean? It's just such a beautiful way to kind of lead us into the ultimate battle and what ends up happening.
Oh, and for the record, letting somebody think somebody they love is dead when they're not is quite cruel. I mourned you for 3 months. And in the third month of mourning you, I tracked you down. I wasn't trying to track you down. I was trying to track down the fucking assholes I thought killed you. So I find you. And what do I find? Not only are you not dead, you're getting married to some fucking jerk. And you're pregnant. I overreacted.
You overreacted? Is that your explanation?
No, I didn't say I was going to explain myself. I said I was going to tell you the truth. But if that's too cryptic, let's get literal. I'm a killer. I'm a murdering bastard, you know that? And there are consequences to breaking the heart of a murdering bastard. You experience some of them. Was my reaction really that surprising?
Yes, it was. Could you do what you did? Of course you could. But I never thought you would or could do that to me.
I'm really sorry, kiddo. But you thought wrong.
And I love that, man, because, you know, like if you want to talk about Volume 1 specifically, which I love, it's just action. It's just her killing people, which, I mean, is great. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But why I wanted to specifically mention Volume 2 was because of the redemptive factors that we get to finally see her live, you know, that come out in her in Volume 2, I feel like. Where in Volume 1, there's not a lot of development to her character and her personality until we get into Volume 2. So that's why I wanted to specifically mention that second half of Kill Bill. But that, you know, like I said, I mean, I guess I could cheat here and just put Kill Bill 1 and 2 because I think of them as one movie. So I'll just say Kill Bill is my number 2. I don't know. Somebody might get mad at me, but I'll say Kill Bill is my number 2. So you said that you're a big Tarantino fan. How you feel about this? Or is this crossover with you?
This is crossover.
Okay, well, go ahead then.
I mean, this is my number 1.
Then talk about it. Tell me why you picked it. Yeah.
I mean, this is my favorite Tarantino movie. Like I love, and I, when I mean movie, I mean both of them together, people. I mean, like I said, they are one movie. You need to get over yourself. Yep. I know he had to release it as two, but if you've seen the whole Bloody Affair, this movie works completely different in the context of it. And I have seen that cut, and it's extraordinary. And I want everyone to be able to see that. I want that on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Come on, Criterion Collection. You can get Parasite this quick. You can get the whole Bloody Affair.
Yeah, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire. They got too.
Yeah. I mean, like y'all can do some work. I know Quentin would love to do a commentary track. Of course, that commentary track might be longer than the movie, but that's beside the point. I love this movie, and this is like the most quintessential badass movie of my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I can watch, and when I watch these, I watch them both together, and I could sit there all day. I don't care what time of day it is or what I got going on. When these are on, I'm watching it because, mm-hmm. you know, I do consider both of them for this list because all the stuff from one is so relevant for part two. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, her having to go to get an Ettore Hanzo sword and doing the training and everything in the second film that we learned from Pai Mei, you know, for her to become the warrior she is. The wedding stuff that we see fully fleshed out in the second part leads back to the reasons why she goes and one by one assassinates the people that put her in that coma, mm-hmm. and took away the peaceful life that she wanted, ultimately then leading it to David Carradine's doorstep and the reveal of, to her at least, of her daughter still being alive, which is one of the biggest and most heartbreaking scenes, I think, in a Tarantino movie. The reaction shot, that quick pan to Uma Thurman's face when she sees the child, mm-hmm. and the quick kind of turn that she has to do to play mom, you know, in that kind of bang, mm-hmm. bang kind of shot that you're dead, mommy. And she has to be a parent for what is essentially a child she's never met, mm-hmm. and also never thought was still alive. It's completely heartbreaking.
Right.
And then, of course, you mentioned the quote unquote Superman scene, mm-hmm. I guess, yep. where they talk to each other about the nature of their business, the nature of these two empathetic characters that were obviously former lovers and admirers of each other's craft. Even one being kind of, I guess, the head of the kind of crime syndicate that they run, assassins thing. And so you see this relationship, and it's not as quick to the draw, mm-hmm. as we've seen all the other ones. She's just ready to kill those other ones. This one's going to be more difficult, mm-hmm. and then to use the method of way she kills Bill, you know, so quick and so, you know, painless, really, mm-hmm. you know, that it's taught by not just her master, but it's his master too, mm-hmm. and then that look of like, how do I look? And she's like, you look ready, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And him just walking into the garden, I mean, it's the ultimate in act of revenge. But then what's great about like this movie too too, is we get to see a little bit of a snapshot after the revenge, mm-hmm. how this is not going to be easy for her. Right. How she did lose somebody that she loved and had to kill him, but obviously now she has to have an immense responsibility. I've never been one of these people that have said, I want Tarantino to make a third film, because mm-hmm. I don't think that it needs to be continued, the story. But dude, man, it's just so damn good. And the action...
It would be great.
The action's just great, but it's his most well-rounded film.
My personal favorite Tarantino is Inglourious Basterds, and then Pulp Fiction, and then Kill Bill. But I mean, come on, bro. I mean... You know, it's nickels and dimes. I mean, it's 1A, 1B, 1C. I mean, they're, you know,
the man doesn't make bad movies.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. So, well, look, dude, we flip flopped and cross over here. My number one's Unforgiven, go ahead and say the Clint Eastwood masterpiece. And his masterpiece is the best thing he's ever done, definitely from the director's chair. And it did win in the Academy Award. And I want to say Gene Hackman also won for supporting actor that year, I believe.
Yes, he did.
But it was definitely inundated with awards and deservingly so. Now, from a revenge standpoint, you mentioned beautifully kind of the main narratives that are driven in this revenge western, which is one of the prostitutes gets cut up and her face gets mangled, mm-hmm. and the other prostitutes decide to gather their money together and put a bounty on the dudes that did that. Mm-hmm. So they are seeking revenge for their friend. And then you mentioned towards the end of the movie when Clint Eastwood kind of gets his revenge tick and he seeks revenge for what happened to Morgan Freeman. What I love about this movie too is he's also in a way trying to get revenge against his past, mm-hmm. and he's constantly running away from it. And what we realize throughout the course of this movie is that we are always going to have what makes us the people that we are always going to be there. Those traits are always going to exist. We can bury them and people can change and all that stuff, but those things are always there and they're always part of our psyche and what kind of drives us forward. A little thing that I love in Unforgiven that's kind of a recurring theme throughout it that kind of goes to my point here is when he refuses whiskey throughout the whole movie. You know, I don't touch the stuff anymore. My wife cured me of it, he says a couple times. You know, she cured me of drinking and wickedness. And he's just like ashamed, right? He's like constantly ashamed of his past and his reputation. He's constantly trying to like not discuss it and forget about it. He doesn't want other people to know about it, but they do because it's so infamous. It's like a Billy the Kid type character, you know? Yeah. And then in the end, when he finds out what Little Bill did to his only friend in the world, Morgan Freeman, and he just grabs the whiskey bottle from the Schofield kid and just starts chugging it. And you can see almost in that split second that he just turned back into the outlaw that he was 20 years before.
Oh, yeah.
And he takes out his vengeance. And it's amazing, man. And when he rides off into the rain and the horse that he's on just disappears into the darkness, you know, and he turns around and he says, "You better bury Ned properly or I'm going to come back and kill every one of you murdering sons of bitches."
God, such a great line.
It's just the best. And that's how it ends, man. And, I mean, it gives me chills. It was also the last movie from a nostalgia standpoint. I've mentioned this on the show before, but it was the last movie that I saw with my father before he passed away. He was a huge Clint Eastwood fan. And him and I went to see this in the theater on opening weekend. It was packed, bro. And my dad, was a huge Eastwood fan. He used to show me the old Westerns on TV at the house. And we had to sit in the front row. Like, our necks were, like, you know, up.
Not like it was now.
You know, not like it is now. It was definitely a pain in the neck, if you know it, get my drift,
yep.
to watch a movie the front row, but that was what we had to do. And but I have great memories from Clint Eastwood's catalog just because of my father too and sharing that with him. So that's my number one, and we had crossover in our top two there, Kill Bill and Unforgiven. So those are the first two that came to mind for me, so I knew they were going to be on this list. All right, so we're going to head over to social media to wrap up the show here in a second, Ryan, and see what some of the fans had to say. We got a lot of feedback for this topic, but before we do that, I have five honorable mentions to round out my top 10. Did you want to give a few honorables that didn't make your five?
Yeah, I got five as well.
All right, let's
Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West, mm-hmm. Which is a great film. I had Man on Fire as well.
Oh, nice.
I have Old Boy. It was really close. I mean, I love mm-hmm. Old Boy.
That's a good
one. Would have made it in there if we were doing a top six. A surprising pick, Rocky IV. Okay. I love Rocky IV.
I do too, man. That's my favorite Rocky movie to this day. Man, I love it.
And hey, that movie has a big, big, you know, angle for the whole second half of that movie is revenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Jane, sure. not just for Apollo, but for America. And my last one is probably the most recent film that I could think of, and it's actually Jordan Peele's Us. And if you've seen Us,
I love it, man.
You know that movie basically centers around a whole revenge plot. So yeah, those are my honorable mentions.
Sure, without giving too much away, since it's fairly recent, but I agree with you, and I do love that movie. It was one of my favorite movies of the year last year. All right, so to round out my top 10, my number 6, you already mentioned, would have been John Wick. My number 7 would have been Leon the Professional, mentioning Natalie Portman again in her, I believe, her first movie role, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But I love that.
Gary Oldman in that movie, dude.
So sinister, bro. Just perfect Gary Oldman. My number 8 would have been The Revenant. Just Leonardo DiCaprio obviously won the Oscar for this, but I mean, just the cinematography in that film, the production design, that's just such a beautiful film. For being outdoors, it's such a beautiful film.
I don't know why people hate them. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't either. I think it was misplaced because they felt like he had won, or he should have won, way before that, which I'm not saying I disagree with that, but that doesn't take away from the credits of the film.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I do love The Revenant. My number 9 would have been the most recent film from 2018. It's a movie actually called Revenge. It's a French film.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that one?
I did. I like that movie. That movie's really good. Really interesting.
Yeah, I did too. I'm a horror fanatic, and it's kind of a really good horror action film. And speaking of horror, I'm going to go all the way back to 1981. You're talking about 80s camp before. Miss 45 from 1981 is one of my favorite films of revenge as well. It just follows a young woman who gets raped in an alleyway and decides to basically go around and let men hit on her, and then she kills them. So... But it's a lot of fun. It's super campy. It's 80s cheese. And she's a badass in it. So check out Miss 45 if you love 80s films. So to wrap up the show, Ryan, we head over to social media and we open up the old suggestion box.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what some fans had to say, if you're down with it, brother.
I'm totally down for that.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll start over on Twitter. Let's see. I'll try to pick out some that maybe didn't get mentioned, but also have to mention some fans that give us feedback every week. Starting with Gidget Von LaRue. I love her over in Australia, a frequent guest on the show. Mm-hmm. Here's her list. Kill Bill, Death Wish.
There you go. Oh, Charlie. Death Wish. Well, yeah.
That's Charlie Bronson, sure. Taken, which you mentioned briefly. Edge of Darkness and Man on Fire.
Edge of Darkness is a really... That's underrated from last deck, too.
I don't know that I've seen that. Who's in that?
So it follows Mel Gibson, and he is like this cop whose daughter works for like this kind of government agency. You know, they're kind of like they're not even really a government agency. They're kind of this kind of corporation. And she ends up getting mysteriously killed, and he's like a cop in Boston, you know? And so...
That does sound familiar now.
He's investigating her murder, you know, and it leads down some really interesting avenues, and it got like Ray Winston playing like a kind of like a hitman to follow him.
Okay.
And Danny Houston plays like the bad guy, and
Ryan, but hearing you talk about it, I know which one that is now. I just don't think I ever saw it, but okay.
Dude, that movie's good. It's a good like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday kind of week, you know.
I'll see what I'm doing next Wednesday. I'll check it out. Colby Mack, a good friend of the show, has got, here's his list: Kill Bill, John Wick, Gone Girl, and A Simple Favor.
That's a good
pull there. Favor is Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick, right?
The kind of one where it's Paul Feig kind of doing his version of Gone Girl, and they're both very good. I mean, Blake Lively, good, yeah. Man, she's great.
Let's see, Real Reviews mentioned Mean Girls. I thought that was cool. And Munich. Mean Girls and Munich.
Oh, Munich's a good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mean Girls, I kind of can see it. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
High school revenge, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let's see. Oh, Miss 45 got a shout out from the Bad Reception podcast. That's exciting. Hey, I didn't expect that. That's exciting. Jameson Rabbit over on Twitter says Memento, which you mentioned briefly when you were talking about Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Matt, or let's see, XC Zonzo over on Twitter says Dirty Work, which I don't know that I've seen.
I don't think I've seen that one either.
Paul,
good mention.
Paul, yeah, I know. Paul Montague mentioned Die Hard with a Vengeance. I don't know.
Hey, that's a good pull. Hey,
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. I'm not.
How about this though? This is great. So Steve from Everything I Love from a Movie says Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah, you got to,
hey,
man.
Hey, you know what? It's in the damn title.
You got to. He's also got Kickboxer, Mandy. Mandy's a good one. Nicolas Cage just full caging out, bro. And then he's got the new Ocean's 11 as well.
Oh, the one with with Clooney and all.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I didn't think about that one. Man, I would have put that on a list.
How about Django Unchained, Mr. Pimental mentioned that over on Twitter. I mean, I think Quentin, because Inglourious Basterds could be revenge, right?
Yeah, because the Basterds you got Shoshana.
Yeah. And Django, then obviously definitely. Kill Bill, Django. I don't think you could really do it for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't think, but not the revenge angle. But Tarantino loves it, though. You can't.
Oh yeah, he. It's a trope that he uses in his movies, but it doesn't feel like one that. It's not like Nolan with time a little bit, you know, or it's just like okay,
right.
The guy's got to have time in his movies. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like it's something that he uses, but he doesn't lean.
Rabid Raccoon Girl over on Twitter says, "I Spit on Your Grave and The Last House on the Left. Two great horror revenge films." I agree with both of those. Video Game on Twitter also mentioned Gone Girl. And then The Culture Bunker on Twitter says High Plains Drifter, which I don't think I've seen, but it's a Western.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd also say something like The Outlaw Josie Wills. That's another one.
That one I do know.
Those are some good ones.
So we're going to head over to the Facebook fan page and wrap up here. These guys are awesome. Guys, if you haven't joined up yet, check the show notes and join our Facebook fan community. That is where we interact with our fans the most. Speaking of which, here are some of the submissions for this topic. Michael Hill, who's been on the show before, he's a friend of mine. He's got a long list, but I'm going to pick out the ones that we haven't mentioned yet. Heathers. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love Heathers and agree with him. Legally Blonde, he says. Okay. Okay. Hey, I love Reese Witherspoon, so sure.
She goes to law school for the revenge of... Yeah, okay.
We'll do it. Captain America Civil War, The Princess Bride, Batman 89... Mask of Zorro and The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, Mask of Zorro.
That's a good one, yeah. He also says Fury Road. So I don't know. I'm going to have to get from him where he's getting the revenge plot on some of these. Yeah. But all amazing movies, though.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that he's making mad choices there movie-wise. He's got a great pace.
Drew Hallam from Real Fills has got Once Upon a Time in the West. How about Law Abiding Citizen? We didn't mention that one yet. That's a good
one. I know it got trashed when it's reviews, but... I actually kind of like that movie a lot. Gerard Butler, he slaps in that movie.
He does.
He's great.
This might be his best role, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
And then he also has Sweeney Todd, which I love.
That would have been probably number 11. I didn't mention that earlier, but
yeah.
I that's one of my favorite Burton movies. I love him too. And Depp's really good with him, too. But, of course, Depp works with him in pretty much every
movie. Yeah. I mean, Ed Wood would be my favorite with the two of them, but yeah. Sweeney Todd's in the top five for sure. David Powell has got The Princess Bride, Van Wilder, and he put in parentheses the dog Eclair. So that's a great revenge scene. But yeah, that's funny to bring back the memories from that. Let's see if there's any on his list that we haven't mentioned. Sleepers, that was a good one from the 90s, I believe, with Brad Pitt and Jason Patrick. Do you remember Sleepers, where they get revenge on the priest?
I've read the book Sleepers, and I've seen the movie. They're both very. It's tough, but it's tough. Both absolutely, very good.
Then he's also got The Punisher, Darkman, Hard Candy, and The Perfection, which I believe is on Netflix right now.
Yes.
That's the rest of his list. Let's see who else. I don't want to forget anybody. I love these guys so much. Travis Crawford's got The Count of Monte Cristo.
Crisco, you know.
Count of Monte Cristo. What?
You know, just making sure you can slide that in the oven, you know, before you.
He's also got Payback, Gladiator, and Memento.
Payback. Good movie.
It is. How about Amanda Inman, our first mention of The Godfather. That's what she's got on here.
Now, this was the movie I was telling you earlier that I did not put on my list, but I would have if I was going, you know, because The Godfather doesn't start off as a revenge film, but it builds up to, of course, that revenge throughout, and it's prominent within the last like 30 minutes. But it's still, I mean, you could put The Godfather on any damn list if you really
could. Yeah, you really absolutely could. Amanda's also got The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, obviously. Elizabeth Salander taking care of business there. Get Carter, Memento, and Point Blank, which is a 1967 film, she says. I don't know that last one, but great list from Amanda there. Lauren Scott, I will wrap up with this one because she is an absolute sweetheart. And she always just brings the heat on these out of left field picks. And they're all like guilty pleasure picks. And every time she mentions them, I'm like, I want to go watch that movie. Like whatever it is, I want to go watch that right now. So for this topic, she put up John Tucker Must Die.
Oh, shit.
John Tucker Must Die?
Oh, my God.
The high school rom-com, you know?
Oh, that's my classic. God. That one was on HBO so much when I was a kid. Now I want to watch it again.
I know, dang, me too. Good Lauren, for you, do that every time, every time. Good. All right, so you. Look, Ryan, you know I love you, man. I love Jay. I love what you guys do over there at Extra Film. Why don't you tell, since you're a first-timer, tell everyone where they can find you online, brother.
Well, yeah. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RyanMcQuaid77. Like you so eloquently stated, I do the Extra Film podcast with my co-host Jay Ledbetter for In Session Film. We usually talk about a lot of indies. Right now we're in the middle of doing a James Bond miniseries. Our recent episode, we just talked about Goldfinger. We're going to be doing a kind of more and more of those leading up to the new James Bond movie. I also do the Chasing the Gold Oscar show for In Session Film. We just wrapped that up because thank God award season's over for a little bit. And that was a lot of fun. And then I do reviews over at In Session Film, but I also do a lot of writing over at Award Circuit.
Love it, man. Thanks so much for coming on, Ryan. I hope you come back soon, buddy. We'll come up with a nice topic for you. Maybe something Tarantino related, and we'll have you on.
Listen, I love the show. I'm so honored to be even allowed to do this top five with you.
Absolutely,
and,
man.
I am, anytime you call, I'll be there, my friend.
I love it, brother. Thanks so much for being here, guys. For Ryan, this is Gerald signing off until we do another top five for you next week. Ryan, take care, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man.
Thank you for listening. Two Peas is an independent podcast. We rely on donations from our executive producers in order to release new content weekly. We would like to give a special thanks to all our current producers: Kathy Ross, Dan Brennick, Caleb Brownlee, Justin Esquivel, Paul Chomo, Carmen Signy, and Daniel Henderson. If you would like to become an executive producer and help us continue to release great content, please visit 2peasonapod at patreon.com or check out the show notes for this episode. Again, thank you for listening.